guest today is Professor Jim Sheehan. He was a senior social worker and is a practicing family therapist. He was also the director of family therapy at Mater University Hospital. At present, he is the professor at University College in Oslo, teaching family therapy and systemic practice. He has also published a book on family conflict after separation and divorce. And all in all, Jim is a walking, talking encyclopedia of knowledge and wisdom. So, good morning, Jim. Shall we begin by talking about your book?
Thank you very much. Good morning. Where should we begin?
So, Jim, let's talk about your book.
Yes, certainly. Yes. First of all, well, the book is just about to come out now. I just had a contact this morning from the publisher to say it's going to the press now. So the book is actually about the conflict in families after separation and divorce, and it's what mental health professionals can do to try to help children and their parents when they get into conflict after divorce. That's really what it's about. You know, like there are lots of families who go through divorce without too much conflict, and they often need little or no help from mental health professionals and little or no help from the courts.
Mm.
There are certainly at least about one third of all families, I think, who go through separation and divorce who do need, you know, quite a bit of support of mental health professionals. And then there's probably maybe a quarter of them who really need the help of the family courts and all the professionals who work with those family courts, do you know?
Yes. I suppose the good thing is that you are writing this for the mental health professionals, not
exactly.
Only... Yes, that is a really important...
But I hope it will be. I think it's a book that I think will be of use also to parents.
Hmm.
So it's not really just for professionals. I think it will be of use to parents as well.
Yes.
And hopefully to lawyers and everybody, all other healthcare professionals and social care professionals who work with families who are going through these kind of crises after separation.
Yes.
And of course, you know, we were mentioning the whole question of people's mental health.
Yes.
When you go through a transition like separation and divorce.
Yes.
It creates a vulnerability in almost everybody.
Yes.
With respect to mental health. There's not a person I know who's gone through the process that doesn't have some kind of mental health stress as a result of the transition. You know. So really everybody gets affected by a transition like separation, you know?
Yes.
And while it's not as difficult going through separation and divorce now in this country as it was maybe 30 years ago,
It's
still a huge crisis.
It is.
And it's a huge loss for parents, for children. No matter whether they are choosing it or not, it doesn't really seem to matter. Everybody going through that transition really suffers a great deal.
Indeed. But most people don't realize it, I think, and people keep it to themselves. It's something that people keep themselves.
They keep it to... keep it to themselves.
Yes.
Or they can get so focused on the conflict that after the separation that they don't actually keep a focus on their own mental health at all.
Yes, yes.
So they're just watching out for their children and they're just watching out to see the next move in the conflict and how they can, you know, protect their children in it or whatnot. And it's often their friends or their family who notice the fact that, you know, they're not sleeping or they're certainly very down or that they seem depressed. You know, or that they become excessively anxious, because if you're working, you know, if you're out there in the work world, everybody just expects you to keep on going, you know, as normal, and yet you're carrying this huge transition in your life, and your colleagues can see it at work, but that your performance, you know, going down, not being as good, not being able to complete your tasks as well, so on.
You see, Jim, you're talking about mental health professionals. So mental health professional means that you must be mentally sick, like, and it's very hard for people to, you know.
No, I think that, Lakshmi, that's one of the real problems we have to get over within our our culture and in our society.
Yes.
You know, there's a whole continuum of mental health context, from mild symptoms that affect people to very serious kind of mental health breakdowns.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
But it really is a continuum, and I think we really have to kind of get over this sense that you know, there's still a lot of stigma. Isn't that really what you're getting at?
Yes,
a lot
yes.
But
yes.
still, in relation to mental health issues.
Mm.
And of course, sometimes in the context of conflict, people can use that against each other as a sort of a stick to beat each other with,
yes.
you know?
Yes.
And that, of course, is very unpleasant when it happens. So, I mean, I think that we have to understand around mental health issues that transitions, these big transitions in life for all of us, create these vulnerabilities, do you know? But it does not mean that we're going to get stuck in a rut forever and a day. But what it does mean is that we often need help short term to come through these crises and to come through them well enough, you know?
Mm. So, Jim, in your experience, now you have a huge amount of experience and working in, in the courts as well, isn't it? You,
yeah.
you support people who go to courts and write probably, reports on families
yeah.
and so. So what are your experience? What do you find that is really that you could share with us?
Yeah, well, I think that like to be one of the things that certainly the courts have had to learn about parents who have had different types of mental health and psychiatric diagnoses.
Mm.
This does not mean that their parenting is impacted forever and a day or anything like it.
Mm.
So very often many parents who have had and maybe are on medication for different kinds of conditions, very often they can, in lots of good times, their parenting is excellent. You
yes.
know?
Yes.
And they get on, and they get on with life, and they're really good parents for their children. And then they sometimes go through periods of crisis in different ways or another, different ways that,
mm.
that where really their parenting cannot be as good as it was before, and they do need help.
Yes.
And very often, one of the things the courts try to do is to try and understand the variation in those patterns for some parents. Variation in the pattern of their parenting capacity,
yes.
so that the other parent can come in and step in and support more without taking over.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So one of the things that parents with mental health conditions fear greatly, certainly after separation,
mm.
is that, you know, if they let people know of what they're going through, that the other parent might use it as a means of trying to come in and wrest custody from them or take the primary care of the children and so on. And often that kind of fear and anxiety makes things worse, you know.
Yes, yes. And I suppose you're talking about compassion all around, isn't it?
It's absolutely. Compassion
yes.
is absolutely central to it.
Mm.
You know, we need to build a more responsive, compassionate society that is less fearful with respect to talking about our mental health experiences and our anxieties and all the different things that
mm.
go with. We need to create a society where we can all be much more caring and compassionate of each other, particularly when we go through these very difficult issues. And you know, that means getting over a view in society that we're divided into two groups, one that doesn't have mental health issues at all, you know, the so-called healthy and sane,
mm.
and the rest, the ones with the mental health difficulties, the diagnoses and the medication, you know.
Mm.
We have over that kind of us almost, it's almost an us and them attitude, you know. Now I have to say there are lots of pockets in our society where the stigma is certainly not as great as it was.
Yes,
know?
Yes. But people are learning, I think.
What that?
But yes.
People
are talking, there's a lot of discussion, even about the referendum. People are discussing things openly. And,
yeah.
you know, sometimes media can help or they can hinder it. But I think there is a discussion, whatever it is, for or against, yes.
That's right. And I think that discussion is very important, because one of the things I realized is that, you know, mental health professionals, the professional people who come in to help, can only do so much. Hospitals can only do so much. Community health nurses can only do so much. Social workers, psychologists can only do so much. Psychiatrists can only do so much. In the community, we have to develop our own responsiveness to each other,
yes,
as a local neighborhood level.
Absolutely.
You know, where we say hello to each other, where we keep open our connections to each other, where we really are prepared to listen to each other when we ask somebody about how you are, you know, and really be available to help, you know. So that's extremely important, that we develop that ordinary citizen to citizen relationship around mental health.
Yes,
you know,
but
it's not a professional to patient relationship. It has to be the whole community working together around these things.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The thing is, I suppose, I mean, we have to connect with each other. Hello. Yeah, connecting.
Exactly.
I think my colleague wants to ask something, a question from you.
Yes.
Professor Sharon.
Yes.
I've interviewed, actually, the last piece we played was some interviews we did at the launch of the Green Ribbon event in the Mansion House a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
And I was actually up in the Lynx Project in Ballymun on Friday.
Yes.
And I asked the same question of everyone, and I'm going to ask you this question as well.
Yes.
If any of our listeners are out there and they have concerns, re their own or one of their family or one of their friends' mental health, what advice would you give them?
I would first of all say try immediately to talk to somebody about it, to somebody close first of all, and that often can be, you know, it may be family member, it may not be a family member. Think about where you're living, try to speak to somebody else about it. If you have a concern, and there's nobody you can speak to about it immediately, I would certainly say try and talk to your GP about it. You know, particularly if it's about yourself, right? Now, if it's about somebody else, that's a bit different. You know, it's not easy to go down to a GP and say, excuse me, I have concern about my neighbour, you know? But it's certainly, if you have a concern about a neighbour or somebody you know, try to talk to them about it. You know, try and find a way to sit down, say, will you come in and have a coffee? Will you come and talk with me? You know, just to sit down in an ordinary way and ask the person how they are. So it really is about reaching out, do you know, and inviting somebody to tell you, you know. What does that sound like to you?
That, believe it or not, that is exactly, virtually word for word, what everybody has said to me from John
Saunders
to Minister Jim Daly to a lady whose name eludes me just at the moment that I spoke to up in the Lynx Project last week.
Yes.
And I think it's just so important to get that word out now to everybody. Talk about it. Talking is good for you.
But it's very hard, Jim, because it's hard because it depends on the community, how it reacts with each other. Members of a community reacts with each other.
You're absolutely right, because
yes,
you know, on the other side of this is we're kind of living in a culture that is very individualistic as well.
Yes,
you know, and the culture kind of expects individuals to cope on their own. I mean, it's interestingly, one of the fastest growing type of households in almost every urban area in the West is the single person household.
Yes.
Oh, and, you know, that's why it becomes so difficult to reach out and yes. to reach out and indeed to reach out to somebody who you think may be going through some difficulties.
And the word privacy. Privacy, what? You know, I'm private, you know, like it's...
Yeah, and yeah. It's this question of privacy, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes,
We don't want to intrude, you know, we don't want to intrude on the other person because they have a right, we need to respect their right to some privacy. But at the same time, we have to create a culture that is allows for connection.
Mm.
So, and of course, one of the problems, Lakshmi, that we face in today's world is that and it's something that I wrote about in this book.
Yes,
that we have a society that actually fosters a whole lot of different kind of bits of communication. You know, as in quick communication through texting, Facebook, all this kind of stuff. But there's no real relationship. Do you
yes.
know?
Yes. Yes.
So
personal
we
relationships
really are yes. beginning to create a society where relationship falls down at the same time as we have this multiplicity of things at our fingertips on the mobile phone to create
yes.
some kind of contact out there.
Yeah.
So we can get into Facebook, we can text, we can open websites.
Yeah.
And, you know, the point is this, that we're deluding ourselves to think that this is really
communication
very good for us.
Yeah.
Because it's not. What we need to survive is real relationship.
Yes.
And we need face-to-face contact.
Exactly, yes.
So where we
it's interesting you say face,
morning,
Facebook.
We stop and we have a few words with them and we say kind of, I recognize you, you're there, I'm here, we're alive together. Do you know?
Yes, yes. It's face-to-face rather than the Facebook.
Exactly, face to face rather than
Facebook.
Exactly, that's
yes.
right. You know,
what advice would you give in your book to professionals
about which now about where there's mental health issues?
Yes, you know, like I think there are, for instance, maybe the naming of the challenges faced by professionals.
Yes, well, I think
and
for
the skill
example,
sets required.
Where there's mental health issues after separation and divorce, I think what's really important is the extended family are
yes.
so important to gather around people and to try to, if it's at all possible, reduce the conflict. And this is where I think, for example, the role of grandparents
yes.
is so important in the management of contexts where there are mental health issues. Grandparents, you know, there's one of the nicest pieces of research that I saw over the several years ago was the fact that as we get older, we find it easier to forgive each other. You know?
Yes, yes.
There's very, you know, and that's a very important thing. Older people tend to be a bit more forgiving, and they can also foster a bit of forgiveness after conflict in their children.
You know?
And they can play a great part in both supporting the parenting of their own children, you know, where their own adult children are struggling. They can support that, but they can also be really supportive by you know, containing the conflict.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
And containing the bad stories about people.
And I suppose bringing in more wisdom to it than challenges.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Bringing a bit of wisdom to it, and you know, the reality is that lots of people go through mental health difficulties, but come out and survive.
Mm.
You know,
and
of course we know that tragically, they don't. Some people don't.
Yes.
And I have a whole chapter in this book on the issue of familicide.
Yes.
Where people conflict gets so bad and is mixed with mental health issues.
Yes.
Is such that people often kill their own children and sometimes kill
yes.
themselves.
Yes.
You know, that's the darkest side
yes.
of family conflict after separation and divorce, and we need to keep in mind those parents and children who suffer that, you know.
Mm.
Are people in our communities whose children have been killed and whose ex-partners have killed themselves in the process of doing that.
Yes.
And those kind of tragedies are things that we need to keep in mind, you know.
Do you think that's because they have no one to turn to?
I think that's undoubtedly an aspect of it, or perhaps they have turned to it. Although
yes.
the small pieces of research that I have found in connection to this show that very often these individuals who kill their children and who then kill themselves have gone under the radar with respect to health services, or they may have kind of had very, very small amount of contact with mental health services whose assistance they have basically evaded, do you know?
Yes.
So it's not that the health services weren't there to try and assist them, but very often those same people will work hard to avoid. They'll just look for a little help, or they'll be in and out of the court system very quickly, and they won't really be picked up, if you like, by the professionals.
Yes.
You know?
And how does the court system help? Do you think the courts, the laws in this country could expand and help a little bit more of these conflictual families?
I tell you what I think about the family law system in this country. The family law system in this country is struggling enormously.
Yes.
And it's struggling because it doesn't have a family-type service associated with it.
Hmm.
You know, you have a kind of a mediation service that
yes.
works reasonably well for some people, but you have a whole lot of other families who go through the system and children who are subject of the family court's work, where really the courts have really no support services themselves at all.
Yes.
And so what you have in this country is you have a big disconnect between the judicial system of court work and other health work.
Yes.
Big divide,
yes.
you know.
Yes.
And we're not good at joining up in this country. Professionally, we're not good at that.
Mm.
We don't do that well. You know,
I don't think they understand what's needed. Probably, they're not because they're not joined. That they don't understand what's needed by their clientele.
Well, that's right, because I think you know it's out of the joining that comes a better understanding.
Mm.
You know.
That will
come much more when these systems join up and show each other what they have learned themselves. So there certainly needs to be, you know, much better coordination at every level. Say, for example, between child protection services,
yes.
who are often dealing with parents and young people who have mental health challenges, and the family court system itself. That needs to be much more joined up. You know, like a small example would be things, for example, like say in the areas of the listeners to your station, where, for example, there might be one or two major child protection services in the area.
Yes.
And if those social workers who are doing an extraordinary job on a daily basis, if they are needed in the court to give evidence,
yes.
in a case, they have to go in and they have to wait, and they often give up a whole day. To
yes.
give evidence for half an hour in a case, and
yes.
or sometimes don't get on to give evidence at all.
Yes,
rather
and they have caseloads.
Yeah, it's terrible. And rather than having, for example, a system whereby the court can hear their evidence from their own centres in their area, so
yes.
there should be rooms in the child protection services where somebody can, through a video link, give evidence.
Yes.
To a court without having to travel into the centre of the city, say from Coolock or North County Dublin,
yes.
Come in there and, you know, waste effectively a day.
Yes.
You know, it's not on. And that's kind of, that's a wastage of resources.
Yes.
I mean, the reality is that in the criminal area, sometimes there are possibilities with prisons. For actually, the criminal courts can connect sometimes with prisons and prisoners. Through video links, and various procedures can happen in that way. Why can't we do it in the mental health and child protection area? Do you know?
So, Jim, mental health is a huge, comprehensive. I mean, it goes into all kinds of areas, isn't it?
It goes into all kinds of areas.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing I think we have to realize is that. We're all responsible for each other.
Absolutely.
Not for
yes.
ourselves. We're responsible for each other.
Yes.
All the people we meet every day, we need to keep an eye out for them.
Yes. It starts with the community,
it's
as members of the community.
Exactly, Lakshmi.
Yes.
It's the community.
Yes.
And we have a responsibility to build and rebuild that community.
Absolutely,
every day,
yes.
All the people
it's
we meet.
For us to do, it's our responsibility as
our
members of society.
Yeah.
So thank you. Thank you so much with your wisdom.
Not at all, Lakshmi. It's a pleasure talking to you and
come again.
and to have your listeners listening.
Yes, and thank you. Thank you so much.
The community without the listeners listening.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.